This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about employment law. This is part two of our employment law podcast, so please do listen to our part one. I am here with barrister Miss Lisa Hatch from 1 Essex Court Chambers in London. Lisa is an exceptional employment law barrister who has a strong and particular expertise in long and complex cases. She regularly represents both employees and employers in employment tribunals, the Employment Appeal Tribunal, and in both the County Court and High Court. Lisa represents cases involving all forms of discrimination, unlawful deduction of wages, pensions, employee monitoring, restrictive covenants, and confidential information, to name but a few. Thank you very much for joining me today, Lisa.
Good morning, Hattie. It's great to be here.
And I just want to mention 2P as well, because I didn't say that in my introduction to you. I left it out because I thought I don't want to say it wrong. So is that right? 2P? T-U-P-E?
Absolutely right. Spot
right. On. Now we've clarified that point. What I'll tell our listeners is very quickly what we discussed in our part one of employment law podcast. So if you want to hear the answers to any of this, these questions and the conversation we had around these, then please do go and listen to our part one. So we discussed what is employment law, how can it help me, what can I do if I'm made to feel constantly upset at work. What is meant by raising a grievance? How can doing so assist me? What is a time limit in the context of law? The specifics on time limits on raising a grievance or a complaint or for making an unfair dismissal claim. We discussed how long should a company take to respond to a grievance and can I be fired for filing a grievance? What can I do if I'm not happy with the company's response to my grievance? And is there a standard formula for calculating redundancy pay? So part two, Lisa, can we start please with discussing who are ACAS? I mean, what does ACAS stand for and who are they, please?
So ACAS stands for the Advisory Conciliation and Arbitration Service, and it's a publicly funded independent organisation that promotes better employment relations. So ACAS say that their mission is to make working life better for everyone in Britain. They offer lots of free advice and training on employment issues that you can find online. But another extremely important part of ACAS's role is to provide an alternative way to resolve workplace disputes rather than litigate them in the employment tribunals. And they do that by offering conciliation, arbitration, and mediation. And listeners may have heard about collective conciliations that ACAS carry out between unions and employers. But a second very important form of conciliation is early conciliation. And that was introduced in April 2014. And it's very important for anyone who is thinking about bringing a claim against their employer to know about this. And that's because it's mandatory for anyone wanting to bring an employment tribunal claim to contact ACAS before they lodge their claim to see if ACAS can resolve the dispute through early conciliation.
And that's very interesting because that's been around since 2014, we say, and being in 2020, that, you know, that's 6 years ago. So you would think that, would you say that's limited the amount of cases that go to tribunal or go to litigation greatly? Lisa, as an employment law barrister, did you see that that service had, you know, a positive effect on reducing the amount of cases? Because tribunals and litigation in courts, they're long, expensive, and they can be incredibly stressful processes.
Yes. Well, I mean, the employment tribunals will only accept your claim if you've been through the early conciliation process and have an early conciliation certificate number. So anybody who's unaware of the early conciliation scheme and doesn't follow it will be precluded from bringing a claim. But I've got to say the process is fairly easy and it can be done fairly quickly online. All you have to do is to complete an early conciliation form online. ACAS then contact you within a couple of days and they go through the information that you've provided, ask a few questions and assess whether they think that they can help. And if you're happy to take part in the early conciliation scheme, they will try to contact your employer to see if they can resolve the disputes between you.
Does ACAS have any sort of percentages of what number of cases get resolved at ACAS? That's the first stop. Or are there sort of no statistics of that?
It's a very good question. There. And ACAS do publish statistics. I don't have them at my fingertips, but yes, it's a very good question. Yes, they do publish reports on a regular basis showing their success.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm very, very mediation pro. I think that mediation in any form of legal dispute has to be right and you really have to give it the best shot you've got. And particularly if you have independent people involved, like, for example, in this case, ACAS, who are completely independent to your situation. They're not tied to your employer. They're not tied to you. They're not emotionally involved. There, hopefully, you know, is a good chance of settling any dispute. And that's got to be the right thing to try that. And I think it's very interesting and very important for listeners to bear in mind that before you do go and lodge file a complaint at the tribunal or lodge a claim through the courts, you have to have gone to ACAS and tried that process. And, you know, I think try it with an open mind. Try it with a mind to try and settle if you can.
Absolutely. I think ACAS say that they deal with millions of employers and employees every year. I know that when you fill in the Employment Tribunal form, there is a section where you have to insert your early conciliation number. So it's a reminder, if you like, for anybody bringing a claim that there is a conciliation process that they should have considered. And as I say, yes. If you don't fill in that form, if you don't go through the early conciliation, then a tribunal will reject your claim.
Yes, very important. And just for our listeners, the ACAS website is www.acas.org.uk. Okay, so the second part of our conversation, disciplinary action. And I think that most of us at some point have heard this term. What is disciplinary action?
Well, this is where an employer takes action because it has concerns or a complaint about your work. There can be lots of different reasons for disciplinary action, but usually action follows if your employer has concerns about your behaviour at work or the standard of your work or your absence from work. But I should point out that any concerns about absence from work shouldn't be confused with a situation where an employee is on long-term sickness absence, because in that case, the procedure that's followed is usually different and can be quite complex.
I have to say, when I hear you sort of talking about the reasons why an employer could consider disciplinary action, I almost feel like I'm at school again, sitting in front of my teachers and they're saying, right, it's your behaviour. So disciplinary action is an action that an employer can take if they have concerns or they are unhappy about your work. And I guess there's a process for that, isn't there? They can't just say, right, okay, we're going to make up our process. I mean, they should set it out in a letter, for example, and detail any alleged misconduct or poor performance or what the possible consequences may be. I mean, these are key things, aren't they? So if you have slipped a bit and something, perhaps you're not even aware of that you're about to, you know, have a disciplinary action against you, but there is a procedure. There should be a procedure, shouldn't there? The employer
absolutely.
To take.
Absolutely. And you're quite right that the good communication is key in this area. I mean, often problems can be resolved informally, but if it's necessary to take a formal route, then a procedure, a disciplinary procedure needs to be followed. And every employer is required by law to outline their disciplinary rules and procedures in a statement of terms and conditions that they're supposed to give to each employee. So those disciplinary rules and procedures should be set down in writing, and you're quite right, they should be specific and clear.
I think one of the things you mentioned, Lisa, is absence from work. And I had a colleague once who had just the time of that person's life where he had to take long periods of time off sick because of medical conditions that he had. And I think, you know, it's important for our listeners to be aware that there are, if that's the only concern an employer's got, that, you know, you're absent from work and the reasons for that, you know, are sickness or whatever, then disciplinary action really can't come into that. It doesn't really fit into the same box, does it? You can't discipline someone for being off work. Albeit in 1 year, it could have been five times, just unfortunately, you know, for long periods of time.
Yes, if somebody's suffering from a long-term sickness absence and they have perhaps underlying health issues and long-term underlying health issues, it may be that actually they fall within the disability elements of the Equality Act. So as I say, long-term sickness absence cases are a slightly different character. Different area, and I think here we're talking about in terms of sort of the more day-to-day disciplinary action.
Yes,
issues with conduct or competence, really. And here we're talking about disciplinary rules which set standards and make it clear to employees what conduct isn't and isn't acceptable in the workplace. So it's slightly different from a long-term sickness absence situation. Now, the idea is that those rules are supposed to help employees know where they stand on a range of issues. And once again, in terms of sort of more normal day-to-day disciplinary action, ACAS have an important contribution to make once again, because there's an ACAS code on disciplinary and grievance procedures, which applies in any disciplinary situation, which sets out obligations on both sides, on employers and employees. And it sets out standards of reasonable behaviour that are expected in most cases, and basic principles of fairness.
So I guess somebody could actually go onto the ACAS website and read up about that if they're concerned about what their employer is saying in this potential disciplinary action, and if they don't agree with the reasons outlined, perhaps, with what their employer is giving. And I know, you know, you quite rightly said, you know, communication is absolutely key. So try and resolve it in-house in as much as a non-contentious way as possible. I mean, the reality is, if your employer has stood up, and it could be your direct line manager, it could be the person above that person, and says, look, there's a problem with your work, for whatever reason, it the atmosphere changes, doesn't it? I mean, it is challenging to try and nip it in the bud, but although that's the best thing to try and do, particularly if you don't agree with the points being raised by your employer as the reasons for this disciplinary action, as it were.
Absolutely. It can be a very difficult time for any employee who feels they're under the spotlight or they're being treated unfairly. I suppose the point of the ACAS code is to ensure a level playing field in many respects. So there are a number of sort of basic principles of fairness that it sets out, and every employer should make sure that they are complying with the requirements of the ACAS code. But there are a number of elements that ACAS stresses. And first of all, in relation to timing, ACAS stressed that employers and employees should deal with issues promptly and not unreasonably delay meetings or decisions, so people aren't left hanging wondering what's going on.
Yes, because that could be, you know, that could be awful in itself. I think both for the employer and the employee. Okay, let's talk about now and I'm going to throw all three in the bag. Let's see how far we can get with the time we have. So the unfair dismissal, constructive dismissal, and wrongful dismissal. Okay. Let's start with what is unfair dismissal? Let's bullet point that to our listeners to try and break it down, please, Lisa.
Sure. So the right not to be unfairly dismissed is a statutory right, and it's contained in an Act of Parliament called the Employment Rights Act 1996. And that Act sets out who has the right not to be unfairly dismissed, who has the right to bring a claim, how to bring a claim, and what you might get if you succeed in a claim. So claims for unfair dismissal can only be brought in the employment tribunal. They can't be brought in any other courts. And generally,
That's interesting because I don't think most of us, you know, are aware of that, that they can only be brought in a tribunal.
Sure. And the other thing that listeners should be aware of is that claims should generally be presented within 3 months of the date of termination of employment.
And that's key. I think that's absolutely key. And that needs to be crystal clear. If you have a potential unfair dismissal claim, you have to bring that claim within 3 months from the date that you were unfairly dismissed from. Because that's a short window. That's a short period of time.
It is a short period of time. So we say that time runs from the effective date of termination. Now that 3 month period can be extended to take account of ACAS early conciliation. So there are some circumstances where that can be extended, but it's a time limit that any employee wanting to bring a claim has to keep a very careful eye on, because there's a risk if you don't comply with that.
I mean, Lisa, I mean, I know that, you know, I think we both know, and I've certainly seen cases where people are out of time and because they're just not aware of that 3 month rule. And I've seen cases where people have gone to get legal advice with sort of solicitors, and a particular case where they were not advised of the time limitation and they were out of time. And, you know, these things happen. And I think it's ever so important to get as much information as you can very, very early on, obviously to assist you to try and resolve your matter, either directly with your employer as a first step, with ACAS being involved as a second step. But it's a free service with ACAS, isn't it? So people don't have to pay to try and get that. And that's really, I think, helpful for people to know as well.
It's extremely helpful, actually. ACAS provide a lot of very useful information for anybody who has online access. And there is a wealth of information on the ACAS website to help people. I was going to say the other thing about unfair dismissal that I should point out is that not everyone has the right not to be unfairly dismissed. So you have to tick a number of boxes in order to qualify for the right to claim unfair dismissal. The first box is you have to be an employee. Second box, you must be dismissed, which sounds obvious, but
so let me just go back to your first point. When you say you have to be an employee, so you can't be a subcontractor, you can't be a contractor, that sort of thing.
No, there are various categories of worker status in employment law, and it's only employees who have the right not to be unfairly dismissed. That's an important...
That is very important. What about 0 hours contract? If you're on a 0 hours contract, again, you don't come under unfair dismissal, do you? Or if you are on a 0 hours contract?
0 hours contract is an interesting area. You may qualify for certain employment rights. There are some situations that are dressed up as a sort of 0 hours contract that don't appear to be. I certainly came across one only last week, a sort of so-called 0 hours contract, which actually turned out to be a full employment relationship. So I think the test of whether somebody is an employee or not is not determined by what's written in a contract.
And that's, goodness gracious me, that's very interesting, because, you know, most of us will rely on what the contract says. But you're saying actually the actions between yourself and your employer has a big bearing on what your relationship actually is, regardless of what a potential contract between yourself and the employer is.
That's right.
Business.
Yes, that's right. I mean, employment tribunals frequently have to determine employment status. So they have to work out whether somebody is an employee or a worker or what status they have within the statutory framework of employment law. And generally speaking, they will look at the reality of the situation over and above whatever's put down in writing. So there are a number of occasions where employment tribunals have to examine the minutiae of the day-to-day relationship between a boss and a worker, if I put it in neutral terms like that, to see whether they are employed or not. So it is an important consideration when trying to work out whether you have the right to claim unfair dismissal, to think about whether even if you haven't been labelled as an employee, you might be an employee in
yes. I think that's very interesting. And you know, that's actually all we have time for. Yes, of course.
One last thing. You must have been continuously employed for at least 2 years.
2 years, yes. I was just going to say, we can't talk about constructive dismissal or wrongful dismissal today, but that will appear in our part three. So I'm holding you hostage and ransom to our part three, Lisa. But what an interesting discussion on unfair dismissal, because I have to say, I think one of the biggest takeaways in this podcast is the fact that do not solely rely on the contract that you have and that you signed. The actions between the person that's giving the work, the boss, as you put it, eloquently put it, and the person carrying out the work will speak volumes as well as. So always take advice. I think that's a key point. And take advice early on in employment law, because time limitations, I mean, 3 months, I don't think there's a 3 month time limitation on many other areas of law, Lisa. But I don't think it's a bad thing either, because what you don't want in a way is people to just mull on things years later and think, oh, 2 years ago that happened, and I think, you know, I'll go back and visit that. But yes, what an insightful and informative podcast. Thank you ever so much for joining me, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
And I look forward to part three. And what I'll say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Instagram by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.